From Capital Public Radio in Sacramento, this is Insight. I'm Beth Ruriak. In the months after the fatal police shooting of Stephon Clark, some powerful conversations happened in our studio. Conversations that we think, we hope, helped in the difficult time in Sacramento's history. You'll hear three of those segments today. First, Dr. Gary May. He's the UC Davis Chancellor and a community leader. He agreed to a wide-ranging and quite personal discussion that began with his reaction to hearing the news about the Stephon Clark shooting in March of 2018.
It's difficult. I think in some ways you get numb to these sort of events because there have been so many of them. But that one just kind of struck me. The young man was in his grandmother's backyard, and I just took a walk outside myself and thought, you know, what would it feel like to be unsafe in my backyard? And I felt like I had to write about it and share my feelings with our student community and our you know, faculty and staff community at UC Davis, because I think people often have a hard time empathizing with others. And putting yourself in someone else's shoes, I think, is an important part of healing.
Say more about the empathy that you thought you might evoke.
As an African-American man, there are so many incidents of what are called microaggressions that you experience. And as I said, sometimes you become numb to them. But then when something happens like this to someone else, it kind of brings it all to the forefront in your mind. So you think about all the times when you were treated in a questionable or a different way that you wonder, is it because I'm a black man or is it just something normal? And you never know, because you are in this country and we undergo these kind of situations so often in our everyday lives. What's the line from James Baldwin? I'll paraphrase a bit. James wrote that to be black in America is to be in a constant state of rage. And, I've felt that many times. I think, you know, as an example of a similar situation, when Trayvon Martin was killed after the trial, I remember not being able to sleep after the verdict was rendered and shaking in rage because, you know, that could have been me walking home to my dad's house with my Skittles. And Tamir Rice could have been me playing cops and robbers with my friends in the park, being run up on and gunned down by a policeman. Michael Brown in Ferguson, Missouri, that incident was 2 miles from where I grew up in St. Louis. And I've written and shared on social media how, you know, that could have been me. You know, all those incidents, I think, could have turned out a little bit differently had people had a different approach.
Will you talk about the fear that's in a lot of what you described and that kind of sneaks up and you push back down and then it sneaks up again?
Well, yeah, I think whenever you have a traffic stop, for example, you don't know how it's going to go, right? And we all have had that talk with our parents or our kids about how you should behave and behave respectfully as possible and keep your hands visible and all those sorts of things that I don't think white parents, I don't think, have to have those discussions necessarily with their children the way we do. And it's, it's a constant source of stress. I don't have boys, but I have 2 girls, and I worry about them when they go out and who they're with and whether or not they're going to be in a situation where they get, confronted or someone says something to them that's inappropriate, or and how they're going to react, or how their friends or their boyfriends are going to react when those kind of things happen. So it's a constant source of stress and worry.
Tell me how you navigate having the thoughts you're describing and some fear with the fact that you're a leader, you're a community voice, and those two things are part of you every day, leadership and fear.
Yeah, you know what's interesting is I'm a leader when people know who I am, but when I'm just out, you know, doing my daily tasks in the city or on the street, no one knows who I am. And so there are circumstances where I'm recognized as a leader of university, and there are circumstances where I'm just another black man. And some of those even intersect. I'll recall an incident, you know, the last 3 times when I've been promoted to positions of leadership in higher ed, I've attended meetings of other peers where the first time I attended the meeting, I was asked, what was I doing there? What was my role? So we're constantly faced by these kind of situations that, you know, just make you think about your situation and your status in life. Doesn't mean as much as you might think it does.
What did your parents get right in guiding you for how to navigate these situations? What did they know then that has helped you?
They always stressed being proud of yourself, standing up for yourself, but also being smart and also having compassion and empathy for others and never sort of backing down, but at the same time, doing the right thing, whatever the right thing is. So I always remind my kids, it wasn't that long ago, my parents had to sit at the on the back of the bus. That's only one generation. And things have changed and things have improved, but things are not perfect yet by far.
So back in February, UC Davis posted a video that you and your mom did, and you were talking about racism. How did that video happen?
My staff wanted to interview my mother as a consequence of, you know, my recent joining of the campus in a leadership role and also with regard to Mother's Day and Black History Month. And my mother was among the class of students that integrated the University of Missouri.
In fact, because of those stories, we're going to play about a minute of that video. We will hear a story from you that follows, but at first, this is your mom clearly remembering some of what happened that first day on campus.
And I walked into the dorm, and of course they called the mothers were house mothers, and things were different, and she was so upset that these two black girls were in her dorm, and she called the housing department, and she says, I've got two black girls here, and I have no idea where are they going to bathe. And then we thought, why is she asking where are we going to bathe? And of course, I was a little flippant too, and I thought, the color doesn't come off.
I think I was in first grade, and I was one of very few African-American students. One day, we were going to the restroom, and the little boy who was next to me in the urinal decided it would be funny or humorous or whatever he thought to urinate on me. So he turned himself around, and he actually urinated on me. For whatever reason, he thought that was something he could do and get away with. I think that was my first time sort of realizing, acknowledging, feeling, understanding that I was different from the other kids.
Yeah, you know, that's interesting because I had forgotten about that incident until my mother reminded me. I guess sometimes you repress some of these negative things that happen to you over time. But after she did remind me, I did fully recall the young man turning and urinating on me and laughing about it and the other kids sort of laughing. And, you know, what didn't make it into that particular soundbite, as I said, my parents wanted us to stand up for ourselves. So there was a little bit of a altercation after that. That young man caught the wrong end of the altercation. Let me just leave it at that. But
some people might be happy to hear the rest of the story. I'll just leave it at that.
Yeah.
Is that an ever-present awareness still, that idea of being different?
It happens sporadically and situationally. I think I don't know that others ever have to confront the situation where you're one of the only in the room. That happens to me often because of what I do and my position. But and sometimes you take a step back and look around and think about it. So it does happen. Now sometimes it's a benign situation; everyone's friendly and you get along fine. But other times you sort of are wary and worried about what might happen next. So,
what do you think President Obama did or didn't do to impact racism in the United States? And that question is intensely debated right now in the era of President Trump.
Yeah. Well, I'll say when President Obama was elected in 2008, it was a joyous feeling for me. I remember waking up my wife, who had fallen asleep during we were watching the returns, waking her up and hugging her and just being so happy and almost in tears. I remember the next day, I think on The View, Whoopi Goldberg said something that stuck with me. She said she felt like she could put her luggage down, like she could relax and stay, like she was finally comfortable or welcomed or at home. And I had that same sort of feeling. I didn't think that we had entered a post-racial society or anything, because I know we had a long way to go and we still have a long way to go. But I did feel an overwhelming sense of accomplishment through him. And I think you're right. There's debate about how much his presidency impacted the African-American community in a positive or negative way, but people are awfully critical. He wasn't the president of Black America. He was the president of the United States of America. It was his first responsibility to do a good job at being president of the entire United States of America, which I believe he did. A lot of the things that that he did, saving the economy, for example, healthcare, other things, certainly had positive repercussions for African-Americans. And just the fact that he was there and that family was there in the White House, and they were such great role models for all of us, and the fact that they cared about each other so much, and that was powerful for me.
What do you see as the generational shift from your life experience to what your daughters are navigating and how their fully grown up lives will be?
Yeah, it's interesting. I think the pendulum swings a little bit. So I think this era you mentioned, President Trump, some of the things that have happened during his presidency and before and during his campaign were a pendulum swinging back in response to President Obama. I'm not saying that was the complete story, but I do think that there has been some pushback and people saying and doing things that they may have hidden before, now doing it openly. My daughters, my oldest daughter is a pretty is turning into an activist herself, and has some strong opinions and expresses those opinions. As I said, I worry about them from time to time because she might say something in the wrong situation that might get her into trouble. But I respect the fact that she has those strong opinions. I know that there was an incident where her boyfriend was called the N-word at a bar and got into a fight last year. You wonder if those kind of things are a result of the current environment, or just were always there hidden and now they're out in the open.
You have said if a person can learn to be a racist, a person can learn not to be.
Yeah. I believe that. I don't think anyone is born with bias or prejudice or racism as a part of their makeup. I think those kind of behaviors are learned. And I think through experiencing people that are different from you in whatever dimension, I think you can unlearn those kinds of attitudes as well. So I do believe that.
You had a choice after the Stephon Clark shooting to just continue to be new in your job on campus, to say something or to say a lot. And I look at what you did as a lean-in moment that you wanted to be there. Why did you choose that, and how does that effort continue on now?
I'll be honest with you. I struggled with whether I should say anything. I always wonder if I should stay in my lane and talk about higher education issues, or should I say more about what's going on in the world. In that particular case, I thought it was important for our students and others to realize that that empathy, that I could identify, that could have been me, and I wanted people to know that I had those kind of thoughts in my head, that no matter what my title or my station is currently, I'm not immune to what's happening in the outside world and to what's happening to African Americans in this country. So I wanted to give them sort of a reference point by writing about that. And whether it was effective or not, who knows, maybe I should have said or done more. And I always struggle with how much more I should say or do, again, because I'm not the chancellor of the Black students and faculty at UC Davis. I'm the chancellor of UC Davis. So, right. So same kind of a conundrum that I expressed about President Obama. But I did think it was important that people realize that I related to the situation and was aware of the situation.
Your final words in the statement to the community were, "We must change. Out of despair and anger, I ask that we seek solutions and positive change together."
Right. Well, I mean that. I think people have to want things to get better. They have to want to change. They have to want to relate to other human beings in a positive way. It's a struggle. It's not easy. It's not like, writing an equation and getting the solution. It's much more difficult to change human behavior. You have to work at it. And I hope that, we can have a living laboratory at UC Davis where we do work at it and we become a sort of a model culture and society. And we're not there. We've got a long way to go as well. But that's one of my ambitions for my term as chancellor.
That was our conversation from June of 2018 with UC Davis Chancellor Gary May. Next, an extended conversation with KCRA's former news director, Lori Walden. You're listening to an encore episode of Insight on CAP Radio.